Good day, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Michael and Patty Show. Patty, you're looking quite well for this late October morning.
Why, thank you, Michael. And it is. It's absolutely beautiful here on Prince Edward Island, October 2024.
And we're sitting on the Charlottetown waterfront looking at what normally would be the yacht club, but it's now been turned into a giant bird sanctuary. All the birds have all the docks to themselves. Good for them.
Yes, it is quite the scene out there.
Other things going on in PEI, it's marathon day. So once a year, they basically have a marathon that runs all over Charlottetown, all the way from Winslow down to downtown Charlottetown and straight up University Avenue. So that happens once a year. If you want to stay in great shape, it'd be a great thing to join in on. Today, we're going to be going through a bunch of questions. There's about 143 in the queue, but we'll only cover probably a handful of those today, Patty.
Probably a good idea.
And we'll start with making an offer subject to viewing. I have a client that lives about 4,000 kilometers away from the island, and she said she wanted to fly out to take a look at this house to make an offer. And I suggested that she make an offer subject to viewing first, because she's also not interested in paying full price. Do you think that's good advice or great advice, Patty?
I would prefer that they're already here. The only time that I would recommend that a client, a buyer client, put in an offer subject to viewing prior to their arrival is if there's any concern that the property may be purchased. Was that a concern that you had?
I don't even know what that means. I'm totally confused.
If the property is a very active property, a new listing.
Oh, I get what you're saying now. Yeah. So when I told her, this property is probably not going to be sold because it's in the higher end by the time she gets here. But Murphy's Law says that those five or six people that have gone through it in the past month will want to offer, you know, the day prior to her arrival. So I always feel that it's a good idea to make an offer subject to viewing, because I have the house tied up under the conditions and the price that I want. I have the inclusions that I want, the contingencies, everything's set. Rather than coming here, looking at the house, finding it to be my dream home, and then establishing that I can't put a contract on the table for whatever reason. Maybe the vendor changed their mind and they don't want to sell anymore, they don't want to close right away, or they don't want to include certain things that the purchaser wants.
Yeah, and another reason that, just disputing both sides, that you would recommend perhaps a buyer, if they're investing this much time and money flying back and forth from BC to Prince Edward Island, is a little bit costly, hotels, car rentals, all that stuff, is what if the listing agent doesn't share with you that there's an offer that was just received the day before, and because the seller may be exhausted or the offer's attractive, they're not concerned with the buyer's, you know, itinerary and schedule. They may be missing out or not properly advised that they could generate a possible multiple offer situation. So by getting the property under contract prior to, hopefully that saves any upset from the buyer when they do arrive on the island.
So if you're looking at a property and it's only one property, which it is in this case, make your offer, make sure it's under contract before you spend your time and money. Next, I haven't heard much about this subject in a long time, but tax sales. I had a client. It's kind of a funny story. I have a client that has a property that went up for tax sale. But the reason it went up for tax sale, obviously, is because he didn't pay his property taxes for years. But the other reason is because this property is completely worthless. And as it turns out, when it went to the tax sale, someone spent tens of thousands of dollars to buy this property. How many things do you find wrong with that equation? How do tax sales work? Or would you like me to explain it?
Yeah, if you want to explain the tax sales.
You don't pay your property taxes, you will get published in what's referred to as the Royal Gazette, which you can find online. Just search for Prince Edward Island Royal Gazette. At one point, you could subscribe to it and they would mail you out a printed copy. In that, it lists everything going on with the province as far as new corporation, business name changes, dissolving of businesses, and it also lists tax sales. So a tax sale will basically tell you, this is what's for sale, this is the PID number, and this is where we're going to auction it off. A lot of times it will be a town hall. You know, if it's something near Georgetown, I've gone to tax sales in Georgetown. I've gone to them in Charlottetown at the courts. It will happen, whatever venue it happens on, you show up, you make your offer. When I went last time, they wanted like a $10,000 deposit in the form of a certified check or whatever draft, but I don't know if that's the case anymore. They probably may have changed that. Biggest challenge with tax sales, like this particular case, is you're buying a property that's completely useless because you can't do any real tests or due diligence unless you do it prior there too, but you couldn't do a perk test on it because you don't own the property and you have to have the owner's permission, and you're not going to call up the owner and say, hey, I see your property's up for sale. Do you mind if I do a perk test on your land so I can scoop it?
Yes. I mean, it does make sense that unless you do your due diligence for the buyer of this particular scenario that you were referring to, they have no idea that they probably just purchased a completely useless piece of land. That's unfortunate. But again, people think they're getting a deal. So they, as soon as they see tax sales, they just jump and get all excited.
Be very cautious about buying tax sales because most of them are up for tax sale for a reason. Why else would someone forfeit their property over a few thousand dollars? Which brings me to my next question for Patty to test her tax sale knowledge. I sell my property at the auction, or the government sells it for $50,000. I have $5,000 in property taxes to cover. Does the government keep the balance of the money?
Ooh, that's a good question. I would say yes.
You would be incorrect.
Really?
My understanding is those surplus funds will be sent back to you, and they're referred to as excess funds.
Okay.
Or we, what we in the industry call them, excess. So the vendor will get a check for $45,000. In this particular case, he's doing really well because this property probably sold for double or triple of what it was probably worth, if anything. And the reason why some of these properties are worth nothing is because they have environmental buffers. So they might have swampland or a pond or a spring or a river or a stream or whatever, and or waterfront, and all those will have buffers that preclude you from building on them. So unless you're just going to put a picnic table or camp, which may or may not be allowed, depending if there's any restrictive or protective covenants fixed to the property, there's probably not a lot you can do with it.
I'm assuming too, Michael, since you said that the excess funds would go back to the property owner, but the province, I would be confident that they would go ahead and take administration fees, any costs endured.
Oh, there's no doubt interest. I'm sure it's just not service-free predicament.
Yeah, so there has to be some fees that they're also
service-fee-free.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
What else happened in the last few weeks here? Well, we had two properties on the market for probably almost a year, and both of them were very entertaining in the sense that both owners were showing the market data as to what these properties were worth. They decided to go 10, 20, 30, you know, 40% over where the market was. At the end of the day, where did these properties end up? They both ended up within $5,000 of the original market data.
Yes, it's a little frustrating, I am sure for yourself too. The seller doesn't realize how much extra money they would have received had they listed it at market value on the onset versus going through the whole process of, I can always go down, but I can't go back up mindset. And unfortunately, that ended up costing them money because during the selling season, spring, summer, they probably would have ended up with more money than what they did end up selling for.
You mean because people would have been offering over ask or multiple offer situation?
Yeah, and they would have been more confident. Brand new listings, there's usually an excitement around it as long as it hadn't been on the market before and they're just going from agent to agent. But if it truly is a brand new listing being offered for sale, the chances of you getting or generating some strong interest on the onset of that listing is pretty high, pretty strong. You don't want to play games with the mentality, I can go down, but I can't go back up, because you're going to miss out on showings and clients, buyers, consumers, especially those of us that are Canadian, don't want to offend anyone. So we just sit on the fence and wait. We don't want to hurt anyone's feelings.
And it may be more so if a house was on for, say, $750,000, it's probably not appropriate to come in at a $150,000 discount. Chances are the vendor's probably not going to accept that offer.
Not in the beginning, but if it sits for a while and you start seeing price reductions, yeah. So it's a strategy that the buyer has to decide what they want to do and take. And it's also a strategy that the seller has to decide, how do you want to do this? And do you trust your real estate professional that you have hired?
Closing that topic, and yes, you can go up as well as down. So that is an absolute piece of misinformation, and it's been done all the time. Sometimes I'll have tons and tons of information or interest on a property, and we're getting all these silly offers and nothing seems to come together. We've raised the price 40 grand. Now everyone thinks, geez, I could have got it at a discount. Now they raise the price and it sells for more.
Yes. However, I have had subdivisions where as soon as a few properties started to sell because market, the list price of the lots finally reached market value, the subdivision developer thought they had a hot product and increased the price. And a couple years later, they're still sitting on the market. So just be aware of that too.
Next subject, reading the paperwork. Do you think that's a good idea?
It's a very good idea.
What about when you receive an email? Should you read the title and the body?
You should read everything because you're entering into contracts.
Somebody years ago told me, slow down, because I had a tendency to speed read everything. And sometimes I would miss out on things. And now I have these words playing in my head every time I read something to slow down, whether I have to read it two or three times, rather than getting mixed up with the anxiety or the inherent stress of receiving and sending offers and trying to turn them around quickly and not reading anything. And within the last couple of months, I've seen two or three instances where I've sent emails and said in email, this is a draft. Do not sign this. This is just for conversation. Do not sign. Underline. Next thing I know, it's signed and sent back to me.
Yeah, that's not
so
good.
So slow down and read what you're signing. And the other thing is, this is particularly important if the association is changing the forms, because words may have changed. Agents have a tendency just to memorize the forms and never read them ever again. But there are subtle changes from one version to the other.
Yeah, and another good, when you said you will read in some cases, you know, an email or a document a couple times, it's also good when you're reading a document to put on different hats for interpretation, because we can each interpret a message a different way. So I will sometimes go through an email and I read it, and this is an email that I'm about to send. So I'll read it as, this is the message I want to get out, and this is how it's playing out in my head. And then I read it as the recipient. So I'm going through again just to make sure that the email will be received properly, or the clause written will be received properly. And then I will reread it as if I'm a lawyer or an accountant, or, you know, especially, you know, the seller. I don't want to offend if it's a clause that I'm representing the buyer for. So rereading them from different perspectives can also help make sure that your message is clear.
I make sure all my emails and messages are stacked to the brim with lots of emojis.
Okay.
I think that's the best way you can express yourself. Another question, and I asked you this on the way here. A lot of people ask, what does it cost to heat a house in PEI per year? Typical heating system in PEI is an oil-fired boiler with water radiators. What would it cost to heat the typical house based on statistics?
Okay, so since I know the answer, I'm going to say what I honestly said in that moment was I felt the range was $2,800 to $3,200.
And when I Googled it and checked the stats, it was $3,400 per year, which any of those numbers could be fine. It all depends on how you use your furnace and what your heat level's at. Some people turn it down to nothing during the day because of work. Other people work from home and it's at 21 degrees 24 hours a day.
Yeah, and it also depends if you have children that perhaps are crawling on the floor versus adults in the home or seniors as well. That will all cause fluctuations in price. So with regards to heating, Michael, a really good point is if you are a buyer, and yes, it is something that a mortgage lender is going to ask is what's the cost to heat. However, you should be a little bit aware of who's living in the home because that can fluctuate. I've had an elderly lady up in her 80s and her house, it was a very efficient home. However, the numbers wouldn't support that. And the times that I would go over in the winter months, I would leave with a headache because the house was so hot, but she needed the warm temperature inside.
Did she have any kerosene heaters going?
No, she did not.
I went into one house that a senior had, and there was three kerosene heaters. And on the top, there was giant yellow stickers that said, do not use these indoors, obviously, because they burn oxygen. And she was complaining that she always had headaches.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay. Some of the things we run into on a daily basis. Now, here's a situation, and I'll get your opinion on this.
Okay.
Buyer calls me out of the blue, wants to see this property, wants to see it right away because he's from out of province with his wife, and knows nothing about it. He's asking me questions like, does it have a basement? Doesn't even know the price. Doesn't know anything about it. In order for me to show this property, you're looking probably 2.5 hours or more by the time I get there, show the property, get back. So I asked him, I said, are you working with an agent or do you have an agent that's showing you properties? And he said, no. And I said, well, you do understand, number one, these questions are all on the internet. So if he typed in realtor.ca, it would give him everything he needs to know about that house. But number two, I represent the vendor. So I asked him, I said, are you just contacting a bunch of listing agents to go through properties as you pass by them and expect to get in right away? He replies to me, yes. I said, those agents represent the vendors. Their fiduciary responsibility is to the vendor. They are there to get the best contract and the best price for the owner of that home. I suggested that if he did have some dealings with agents on the island before, he may want to contact that agent to line up all of these showings, which at the end of the day is what he did.
Yeah, and sometimes it's just lack of education. So there's two reasons I find, in my opinion, why buyers feel that they just contact the listing agent. One would be, like I said, lack of education. They just feel that that's what they have to do. And it's like booking a trip, you know, overseas without using a travel agent. Yes, it can be done. It's a little bit choppy. You might not have as smooth of a you know, travel itinerary. However, you feel you can do it. Well, people try to do that same thing with real estate, and they assume that, well, I'm just going to call each listing agent. I'm going to be manning my own ship and experience here. It is going to be a little choppy. You're going to get a lot of mixed information and communication, and you probably are not going to have somebody looking out for their best interest because, like you said, Michael, each listing agent's fiduciary obligation and responsibility is to represent the seller because the seller has them under contract. There is a contractual agreement between the listing brokerage and that seller client. So strongly recommend you find an agent, interview the agents before your trip so that you have one that you feel will you best align with, that you feel has your best interest, seems knowledgeable in the property type that you're looking for in the areas that you're looking in, and make sure that you have a smoother experience because, yes, like you said, you were just honest, Michael. Not all agents may not be honest with you and act like, you know, again, they just want to double end the sale. I'm not interested in doing that. I'd rather proper representation.
In some provinces and states, I don't know if you've heard of this because I haven't seen it on the island, you sign a contract with your vendors, your owners, that say that you cannot represent buyers, period, at all. You have a 100% fiduciary responsibility to those homeowners. I would love to see that brought into PEI. In fact, I'd love to see dual representation become a thing of the past like it has been in some places, because how can you work for a purchaser trying to get them the lowest price at the best deal, yet you're working for a vendor trying to get them the highest price and the best deal? It just doesn't work. It's like a lawyer acting for both sides in a divorce case.
Absolutely. And the divorce case would be a good example of that. Under limited dual agency, which is what it is called on Prince Edward Island here, your agent, if you are going through the listing agent, should make you aware. But just to quickly, you know, summarize, there is no representation. The seller has to consent and agree that you represent as a listing agent the buyer. And the buyer also has to agree to this. At that time, you become a facilitator. There is no representation. There is no negotiating. It is just, what do you want? What do you want? You're going back and forth. And really, I mean, you can kind of advise the buyer wants this closing, the seller wants that closing. You can have conversations like that. But when it comes to price, no one should be saying anything. You cannot discuss price. You are on your own 100% when it comes to price when you're in limited dual.
You can discuss price, but you can't bargain for either side. In other words, if the purchaser says, and this happened to me 2 days ago, what will they take for the house, or how motivated are they, or what dollar do you think it's going to sell at? You can't do that as a listing agent. You represent the vendors.
Yeah. And when I just...
And in dual agency, sorry to interrupt you there, you can discuss price, but you can't be bargaining for them. You can say, how much do you want to offer? Okay, I'll write that up.
Oh yeah, that's all I mean. Like, you can't discuss price in the sense of, well, you might be able to, you should offer at this. You can't advise buyers start at this price. You can't advise buyers the seller is, you know, will come down. You're walking a very slippery slope. I don't say anything. I just say, when it comes to price, you are on your own. You let me know what number you want me to put down on that paper, and I'll bring that over to the seller.
Can I give them a winky face, hand gestures, or a dirty look if they're going to offer something too low?
No.
Can I give them a thumbs up or a thumbs down?
No.
Okay. So no verbal indications otherwise. Viewing lots and land. We get calls from time to time where people will phone on a $20,000 lot. It's in the middle of a forest. There's no trees or any way to get to it, and they want someone to show it to them. Number one is most agents aren't going to show lots or land because there's really nothing they can add to the equation for the most part. There was a few agents that did, and they have since retired, so I don't know of any agent specializing in land on the island. But mainly what you need to do is you need to draw the map with the satellite image. I refer to as an ortho. That's old school terminology, but it's a satellite image with the property lines, and then calculate the GPS coordinates, and then bring a handheld GPS with you, preferably. You can use your phone, but it's not going to work sometimes if you don't have cellular coverage, which is quite common specifically on the water. Any other advice for viewing land?
No, again, it is not something that an agent should assume responsibility and liability without the equipment. A buyer's agent who wants proper representation, the agent should have that those kind of tools and equipment with them. If they don't, it's proceed with caution. And again, if you're a buyer's agent, just please be careful. If you're a buyer and this is really important to you, that you know where the property lines are, just write it into the contract. Know that the seller's probably not going to be paying to have the property surveyed. In other provinces, every time a property exchanges hands, it is surveyed. Here on the island, it is not. So if this is something that you deem important to you and it's a piece of land that's got some trees or, you know, maybe perhaps questionable property lines because of the way the items are, like the trees, locations, or anything like that.
The deed.
Well, and the deed. You'd reconcile it with the deed for sure.
Well, the survey is a graphical representation of the deed. And if the deed is invalid, and I'll just provide an example or some examples of that, the deed references to a well that 50 years ago was filled in. So no one knows where this well is. It refers to a fence line that doesn't exist. It refers to a creek or a stream that has dried up. It refers to a shed or a building or a structure or a tree. So by getting a survey, you're validating the deed.
100%.
And a plot plan, of course, is a survey with the buildings on it.
Absolutely. And the written survey, just for somebody maybe just starting to look at land and their options, would be on the deed as Schedule A, that it is a written out version of an actual picture of a survey.
Other things you might find in a survey could be topology, in other words, elevation of the land. That's rare to see. I always want it on mine, especially if it's acreage. Buffer zones, easements, right-of-ways, always nice to know, because even if you're walking the property and everything looks great, who knows if there's a right-of-way or an easement where you're walking that would keep you from putting something there.
Would you recommend an environmental assessment on a piece of land if there was a structure on the property?
I refuse to answer that on the grounds that I may incriminate myself.
Okay. Just something to be aware of.
Environmental studies are an excellent idea. However, in some cases, they may be registered to the property ID number, so you've sort of contaminated that property. And that's sort of an oxymoron, isn't it? You're contaminating a property by getting an environmental study done.
Mm-hmm.
But when the environmental study is done, it may reference to that PID number specifically if the government's doing that.
So
that happened to me 2 weeks ago on a waterfront piece of land.
So would you recommend that a buyer consult with their lawyer and see if there's an environmental assessment registered to that property or attached to it?
Well, they don't have to do that. They just call Access PEI and ask them. Whether or not they'll turn it over is another thing. I just ask the vendor, and you can confirm it with Access PEI. And if they say there's no environmental study, you could get them to sign an acknowledgement and have one done if you wanted.
But what if it was a property purchased at a tax sale? And
well, you purchase at a tax sale. As far as I know, it's as is, where is, and you may as well go to Las Vegas and gamble money away, because you just never know what you're getting unless you're an authority on that or you have some level of expertise. Patty and I would have no problem buying something at a tax sale, but we also have probably looked at thousands of properties and would know about the area and what to expect. And of course, in particular cases, when you're spending tens of thousands of dollars versus back in the old days, you pick up a lot for $6,000, it's a big difference. $65,000 could buy you a nice used pickup truck, the official transportation of the Islanders,
yes,
including us. I received an email, which I didn't know whether I should laugh at or criticize the senders. I couldn't do anything because it's sent from no email address, no phone number, from realtor.ca. But basically what they're saying is they looked at a house I have listed and it was in disarray. Dirty floors, dead bugs, unmade beds, clutter, overgrown weeds on the boardwalk. The home was filthy. They couldn't believe that I would allow people to look at this house in such disarray and they would never use me as an agent.
Well, that's a little harsh.
Not only is it harsh, but it's completely idiotic, because they may want to ask the listing agent why that property is like that. Do you think the listing agents are sitting around saying, Patty, go to your home, mess up all the beds, don't wash it for a month, throw some flies on the ground, and let all the weeds in your grass grow before the listing? No. I, as a listing agent, even with this property, have been hounding this vendor for over a year to clean things up. And there's reasons why it is the way it is, because it's actually being renovated. It's had some issues because it was also hit by Fiona, and they haven't completed all these tasks because they're having a hard time finding people to complete them. So the moral of the story is, if you're looking at properties and they're in disarray or they're not as clean as you'd like them to be, that's not the listing agent's doing. The listing agent would love just to empty the place, have it staged, have it landscaped, paint or pave the driveway out front, make everything look beautiful, and every day it would be sunny and beautiful and there's a rainbow in the backyard. But that's not reality.
And that's not a service typically as a listing agent. That there's lots of services that we offer. However, being a professional cleaning company and service, we can make the recommendation for the seller to do, but I have gone in and cleaned houses.
So have I.
But it's not something I'm going to be able to do every single time before a listing, regardless of the price, you know, whether it's a $100,000 residential property or a $2 million residential property, there is a onus of responsibility that comes back to the seller, because that's how you work as a team. There's my responsibility in trying to facilitate a sale, and being as a team player, the seller's responsibility is to make sure that the property gets shown in its best light. They allow for and try their best to accommodate as many showings as they possibly can. It's a joint team effort, and it shouldn't be a reflection of the listing agent. So that was a little harsh attack on you, Michael.
And presumptive.
Yeah.
And involved a lot of conjecture. Fact is, every house would be perfect if I had control over it, because we'd sell a lot more houses, because a lot of houses don't sell because of their cosmetics. Snow tires. This is sort of a common sense thing, having lived on the island for decades, but I never had snow tires when I lived in other places ever. I ran all seasons. However, snow tires are something that you'd absolutely want in PEI. I've taken two vehicles out. One had all seasons, one had winter tires, the roads were icy, it was the winter, and the snow tires stuck to the road like glue, where the all seasons, I was all over the road. Interestingly enough, according to Michelin, my favorite tire brand, only 2 out of 5 people use snow tires. When I looked up other stats, they're as bad as 95% don't use snow tires. So if you are moving to the island, consider getting yourself a second set of tires so you can too can stick like glue to the road.
That's pretty funny. Since I moved to Prince Edward Island, I always do the studded winter tires. And last winter was the first winter that I just did the regular winter snow tires. And as great as they are, I still would go one step further. I am missing my studded tires, so the next time I have to purchase new winter tires, I will be getting studded ones.
I would suggest against them. From a practical standpoint, they're great, but they're noisy.
I can deal with the noise if I know I'm safe.
I lost a sale last week.
Did you?
And it wasn't my listing. And this particular property was a piece of land. And I know we've gone on and on and on about photos and video and descriptions, but I'm going to continue to do that because this is a real-life situation where I had a buyer for a piece of land. This land would have taken me probably 4 hours to go there and back. The listing agent had two pictures, one drone picture, and that was it.
For land.
And I didn't know this guy. I wasn't about to spend half of my day driving out to somebody else's listing. I asked the listing agent if there were any additional photos, particularly from the air, and he said no. It was sort of my hint to say, can I get some more pictures so I can try to sell this property? But at the end of the day, for the sake of not having proper photos, which to the agent's cost would probably be maybe $350 to $450 to have all this done up by somebody else, they just lost a sale on this property. So I looked up the owners, and the owners are on the other side of the country, on the west coast of the U.S. I'm thinking, why don't you look at your listing? You've got two pictures. They're basically pictures of a grass laneway and a bunch of trees. You got one drone photo, which made me to believe, like, why would you have one drone? Did they launch the drone, take one picture, and quickly land it?
Yeah, I don't think, again, and you're right, we have really just discussed this at great lengths. And I've been at a few marketing appointments this past week where I know I'm up against other agents, and the seller's mentality is they're trying to find an agent to tell them the price, but we should all be coming up fairly close because we're all using the same data. They really should be looking at what kind of marketing representation does that agent put together on their property listings, because it will affect you getting either a sale period, in the case for yourself, your client, Michael, or an attractive sale price. So pictures are so important. Your overview is so important. Make sure that your agent is doing those things for you.
And I think that is it for today. There's a couple other things, but I think we're going to share that for another session. We really appreciate everybody listening to the podcast. Be sure to give us some feedback and a star rating. And be sure to come back again. If you have any questions about Prince Edward Island in general or PEI real estate, just reach out to Patty or I.
Yeah. Until next time, have a great day. We'll talk to you soon.